Well, thanks, Kirk. My name is Leo Booth, and I'm an alcoholic. How great it is to be here with you. It took a long time driving from Long Beach, California. Didn't see too many cars on the road. Straight drive. Didn't see many dead people. Everything looked perfect. And then when we got here, the people, so warm and so friendly. You made myself and Kirk, who's speaking for you tomorrow, very welcome. So may I say to you, it's an honor and a privilege to be speaking for you tonight. So, my name is Leo Booth. I am an alcoholic. I'm an Episcopal priest, retired now. By the way, Episcopal is the Church of England. You remember Henry VIII? Well, Henry VIII started the whole deal. And when we came to America, we couldn't call ourselves the Church of America because that would be unfortunate. So we called ourselves the Episcopal Church. If you don't know what the word Episcopal means, it means the Church of the Bishops. My sobriety date is the 4th of July, 1977. Now you must remember, the 4th of July is not celebrated in England. It was not one of our favorite days. You remember, you kicked us out. It was the beginning of the end of the empire. But Independence Day also means freedom. And so for me, it's the freedom from alcohol. So now I celebrate the 4th of July, and I'm so glad the whole of America seems to be celebrating my birthday. My story is going to be one that you'll find interesting. I got sober in England. I did not come to the United States until 1981. I first went to Chicago, where I was helping people in Chicago on South Ashland Boulevard, which, if you don't know Chicago, is the black area. And they made me feel very welcome. And this was in 1981. They made me feel so welcome. And I think I was helped by a movie that had come out called Arthur with Dudley Moore. It's a very funny movie. You saw the movie? Yeah, funny movie, very funny. His opening line was, "Are you hookers?" I always remember that. "Are you hookers?" It was a popular movie, and I looked in those days a lot like Dudley Moore because I had dark hair, etc. But you're going to hear my story. Hopefully, it will make you laugh. There'll be times maybe it will make you sad. But it's the story of victory. You know? I've been sober for 47 years. And this 4th of July, as I've said to you, will be 48. It's a long time. But I've got to tell you, of course, how I got there and how it all happened. Tomorrow, Kirk will be talking about spirituality. And by the way, that is my forte. I love the spiritual program. And as a priest, it was important for me to know the difference between spirituality and religion. Some of you have already shared with me that in your recovery, you've been able to visit different countries. You've been able to see people from different parts of the world. Thailand has been mentioned. Egypt has been mentioned to me. And AA's in all those countries. It's in those countries because Bill Wilson, instead of writing what he originally intended, you see, what Bill, remember this is being written in 1936, 1937, 1938. This has been written a long time ago. Hitler was then chancellor and eventually dictator of Germany. So we're talking with AA a long time ago. And he nearly wrote, having had a religious awakening as a result of these steps. But it was his wife, Lois, who said to him, Bill, she had a loud voice, Lois. A lot of people don't know that. Loud, she was loud. Bill! He said, what, Lois? She said, if you put religious awakening, which religion would it be? Because in those days, Catholics were not marrying Protestants. Protestants were not marrying Catholics. They certainly weren't marrying Jews. And it made him think. It also made him think about the writings of Carl Jung, who said to him most clearly, in his experience, Carl Jung wrote, unless an alcoholic has something like a spiritual experience, there will be no recovery. And so now spirituality, not religion. And I realize at every meeting that I speak at that there are people who are religious, some might say very religious. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's no criticism of anybody's religion in AA. But also in AA we respect the differences, not only of cultures, but differences of religion that exist in these rooms. And I think that's one reason, I hope you agree with me, why, because Alcoholics Anonymous is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, or religion, there's harmony in these rooms that in many cases is not found in other parts of the United States at the present time. So what we have now is respect for all people. And also, because you don't know this, and the reason you don't know it is because I haven't told you. But I'm going to tell you. I was fortunate enough to do Oprah Winfrey on three occasions in Chicago. And the topic I spoke with Oprah about was religious abuse. Those people who had been hurt in the name of God. And maybe some are in this room tonight, but I know they exist. You see, I think in AA we have love and tolerance as our theme. We believe in a God of love, a God of acceptance. And some people were raised, unfortunately, with a God of judgment. Some were raised with a God that taught more about hell than it did about heaven. And those scars that took place for them at a young age, in the program, as the people begin to do their fourth and fifth and are aware of religious abuse, is contributing to their constant healing. Because I think I'm right in saying Sigmund Freud was a psychiatrist who shared that the first 12 to 14 years of your life determine the rest of your life unless you deal with it. And so Alcoholics Anonymous for me has been powerful, spiritually powerful, and as a priest I've changed, and I think I've become a better priest. I think I'm a better person, and I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as you do. It's given a life for me. It's given a life for my family, and it's given a life to many of my friends. So again, I say to you, what a privilege it is for me to be here with you. And some of you I've never met before. In fact, one person came over to me and said, "Oh, I'm so pleased to meet you. I've heard so much about you. I've listened to your tapes. It's an honor to meet you, Father Martin." I said, "No, I'm not Father Martin. He's dead. I'm the one who's alive." But I was able to flew back to bury my parents. And if you come over and say hello to me after this meeting or tomorrow morning, the breakfast meeting, you'll see I wear this ring. It's this one over here. It's my parents' wedding ring. And my father was a rather dramatic character, unlike me. And on his deathbed, he was all, you know, had all the tubes in him, and it was time to say goodbye. He wasn't able to speak very well, but he did gestures. And he kept going like this, with the ring. And I knew what he meant. And I looked at him, and I saw the tears in his eyes. And I looked at him and I said, "What about the watch?" I got the watch. I got the watch. Oh, yes. We are not a dull lot, are we? We are not a dull lot. Do you know alcoholics is a sickness? We tell more jokes about alcoholics and alcoholism than any other sickness. You've heard the story of the man who's drinking whiskey with his wife, and halfway through the evening, he said, "I love you." And his wife said, "Is that you talking or the whiskey?" He said, "I was talking to the whiskey." Oh, yeah, alcoholic sitting at the end of a bar. And he's had a few drinks. And he said to the man next to him, "What's a breathalyzer?" what's a breathalyzer? And the man says, a breathalyzer is something that tells you you've drunk too much alcohol. He says, I've been married to a breathalyzer for 30 years. Hey, this is a true story, this one. It's funny, but it's true. Some of them are, they're true. In Long Beach, I used to, well, still go, to a meeting that's called Marina Pacifica. And I used to go to the 7 o'clock meeting early. And I was sitting outside, smoking a cigar, I think, and I noticed there was a young man in front of me who had yellow hair, green hair, pink hair, and blue hair. So he kind of got my attention. And he saw me looking over at him. And he said, what are you looking at, old man? Have you never done anything exciting? I said, yes. Once I had sex with a peacock. And I wondered if you were my son. That's a true story. I'm not sure about the sex with the peacock, but the who knows, a lot of things happen. I heard this from somebody who was in Al-Anon. She said to me, she said, she got married to an alcoholic. And first night, they go to the bedroom and he takes off his trousers and he throws his trousers into the middle of the bedroom. He says, wife, get into those trousers. She says, I can't get into those trousers. He says, no. And never forget who wears the trousers in this marriage. But she'd been in Al-Anon for 12 years. She takes her panties off and throws her panties in the middle of the bedroom. She said, husband, get into those panties. He says, I can't get into those panties. She says, no, and you won't until you change your attitude. You may be thinking, what's panties got to do with recovery? Everything. So we can laugh. We can laugh. We can have joy. And we share our story. Our stories help people to get well. Our stories are what make up Alcoholics Anonymous. At first, we come in, and I have met some people who've got less than a year, less than 6 months since I've been here, the last few hours. They've spoken to me. They've shared how well their life is going. And I appreciate it. And they have abstinence. You see, sobriety is not the same. Alcoholics Anonymous is about sobriety, not abstinence. And that comes with something that you don't get in a day or a week or a month. It's called experience, strength, and hope. And you do here what we do in Long Beach, what they do in London, England. We say that the newcomer is the most special person in the rooms. And probably when we have the countdown, we'll see that. But we also especially the newcomer, revere those old-timers who have 30 years, 35 years, 40 years, 45 years, 50 years, who have all those years, through their experience, strength, and hope, have touched the lives of so many people. You know, I've been fortunate enough to meet Father Martin and go on vacations with him. He touched people with his videos in treatment centers that he never met. You know, Chuck Chamberlain touched the lives of people who, to be honest with you, he never ever met. The privilege of being a speaker at a convention or a meeting, weekend meeting like this, of a roundup, is that I may never shake the hand of the people who hear this tape, because I know it's being recorded, or even meet this weekend. That's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't do it to shake hands. We do it because it was done for us. Everybody in this room has been touched by somebody else with their story. I hope that never changes in Alcoholics Anonymous. People meeting people. God knows during the COVID crisis, so many of us were separated from this. And don't misunderstand me. I've never been against Zoom, because some people who cannot leave their houses or apartments can stay connected in AA through Zoom. But during COVID, it also had a decimating effect on the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now I know you guys are getting it back together again, just like we are. It's not easy. It's not easy at all getting the meetings back to the way they were, but we're doing it. And somebody who helped me in Long Beach for many years, and he's now living here, and he's thrown himself into this community of recovering people. I personally would like to thank Steve Pierce for getting me here and being a close friend. Somebody who's touched the lives of many, many people. So the story is what it was like. Oh, what happened? And what's it like now? That's what we do. So I'm a priest. Remember, all of this is happening in England. Don't miss that. You know? Hopefully I'll speak in such a way you can still understand me, but all of it is happening in England. I've never had an alcoholic drink in the United States. Never. I don't know what some of those drinks are. I don't even know how to pronounce some of them. Mine was just gin and tonic. I'm a gin and tonic man, that's me. And as a priest, I drank gin and tonic. Now, I drank through university. I was at King's College. And then I went to St. Augustine's in Canterbury. So I was well-educated, but I wasn't getting sober, was I? And I don't know when I crossed the line, but I know I did. I don't know exactly when I crossed the line, but I know I did. There was times I could drink, and it was reasonably okay. But to be honest with you, I think even through university. I was a heavy drinker. Not maybe a daily drinker, but a heavy drinker. And I should have realized on my day of ordination that something was wrong. Because on the day of your ordination as a priest, you have to hold a Bible above your head as you walk down the cathedral, carrying the Bible above your head for the bishop to then ordain you, your priest. And the night before, we'd been out drinking, and I'd lost my Bible. I don't know how I lost it. To this day, I don't know where it is. But I had to carry something down. You can't walk down with your hands with nothing in the hands. It'd look crazy. And so I looked in the library, and I wanted to find a big book that looked like a Bible to carry. And I found the complete works of Oscar Wilde. I think I'm the only priest who's ever been ordained carrying the complete works of Oscar Wilde. I should have realized there was a problem then. Now, if you're an alcoholic and you drive a truck, there's going to be times you're drunk or hungover driving the truck. If you're an alcoholic and you're a nurse, there's going to be times you're drunk or hungover in the hospital because you take your alcoholism to where you do your work. If you're an alcoholic and a priest, you're going to be drunk doing some services, because that's what we do. I don't know how many funerals I've done in my life, but one comes to mind. Oh, yeah. I was drunk doing a funeral. Now, normally, the family walks ahead of you, and you follow the coffin, and they lower the coffin into the hole, and the priest stands round the side and says the prayers. You know, you've been to these places. I was drunk. I followed the coffin into the hole. It was an 8-foot drop. But it was an Irish funeral. Nobody noticed. Then somebody said, "Where's the priest? Where's he gone?" Somebody says, "He's in the hole." "We better get him out." So they pulled me out, as full of dirt. I had these beautiful white clothes on, you know, and robes, full of dirt. And I carried on after they helped me find the book exactly where I left off. And the only reason I tell you this story is because wouldn't you have thought somebody would have said to me, "Are you okay, Father Leo? You've just been down a hole. You're full of dirt." Nobody said anything. Believe it, nobody said anything. It's like that's what priests do. They find a hole and go straight down. Nobody said anything. So if there's, by the way, if this is educational. Because if nobody says anything, there's no consequences. If there's no consequences, you don't change. I don't know your story, but I know this. I know somebody said something to you. I don't know who it was. I don't know whether it was your parents, a judge, a friend, a son, daughter. I've no idea. But I know if I listen to your story, people were basically saying to you, you can't keep going on like this. If you carry on like this, I'm out of here. I can't put up with this. And I won't put up with this. At this funeral, nobody said anything. So I probably went home that night, I kid you not, and had a gin and tonic that night. Well, next day, got up, carried on. But it gets progressively worse. And so I've not stopped drinking. I've had a few incidents, as you've heard. Now a big one's coming. Oh, yeah. It's on its way. You haven't heard about it yet, but I'm getting there. I'm slowly coming to it. I was doing a baptism. Oh, yeah. By the way, a lot of people were at this baptism. Some of them were Greeks. And I'd been drinking again. I think the baptism was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'd had a few for lunch, a few gin and tonics. Now, I wasn't drunk, but I was mellow. You know when you're mellow? Yeah. Yeah. Remember Dean Martin? Give me the baby, will you? Will you give me the baby? And I decided I baptize this baby in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, Daphne. I decided the name. I didn't ask anybody. It's Daphne. The mother, she let loose such a scream. She said, Father Leo, it's a little boy. I said, well, it's Daphne now. She said, is there anything we can do about this? I said, no. Forever and a day, he will be called Daphne. Now, I'm telling you this because remember the funeral? Nobody said anything. This lady, that day, called the bishop. Yes. Oh, no, yes. And by the way, this is a very big bishop. It was the Bishop of Chichester. He lived in a castle. The castle had a moat. You had to cross a drawbridge to get into the castle. This Bishop Chichester sat in the House of Lords in England. Talk about power. He calls me up the next day. He says, Booth, this is my name. He says, Booth, I want to see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Put the phone down. I thought, why does the bishop want to see me? Because I've moved on. You know, we move on. I mean, I'm not with this, but I've moved on from the baptism. Then I got it. Oh, it's promotion. He's promoting me. So I drive over to see him and go in there. He's got this piece of paper. He says, I've got this note from a woman about a baby, some nonsense called Daphne. Are you sick? He said to me. Are you sick? Are you demented? Are you having a nervous breakdown? And then he said it. Had you been drinking? Had you been drinking? I put my hand on his Bible, looked up to the heavens, said, no. I would never, never do a baptism drunk. He didn't believe me. You know what he said? He didn't say go to AA. He didn't say that. You know what he said? He said, quit it. He said, I want you to quit it. I said, quit it? He said, yeah, I want you to quit it. I said, let's get this right. You want me to quit it? Like now? Like I'm quitting now? He said, I want you to quit it, Booth. That's my name. Quit it. I said, quit it. He said, quit it. This quit it went on for about 10 minutes. I'm in Quiditville. Quit it. I'm driving home, saying I'm going to quit it. I'm going to quit it, I will. I quit it for 6 months. By the way, the worst 6 months of my life. Didn't have you. Didn't have you. And I didn't have the gin and tonic. I'm just on my own. And on my own, I'm not enough. On my own. Without you, without a God of my understanding, I'm not enough. No? And by the way, when you quit it, all you've done is stop drinking. You've done step one. But the program is more than step one. That's why it's a 12-step program. It's not a one-step program. And so I quit it, but I didn't do anything else. And I wasn't going to AA. I was to drink again. And maybe some of you can identify with what I've said because you've stopped yourselves for periods of time, but you've never stayed stopped. I can identify with you. I was to drink again on the 3rd of July, 1977. On the 3rd of July, 1977, I'd gone back to drinking. And I was at my church lunch pub where I used to go. And by the way, I never really paid for a drink. Because if you're dressed as a priest and you go, in those days, 77, you go in a bar, people say, Father Leo's here. Remember, all this happening in England. Oh, Father Leo's here. You know, with a cloak on, big cloak, big coat, black, a little white collar. And I'd say, can I have a gin and tonic? And somebody would say, get Father Leo a gin and tonic. A big one. Give him a double. A double. I never paid. I had about six doubles at lunchtime. Now I'm ready. I'm driving home. My car, I don't know how it happened, my car, it hit a tree. And then it hit a lamppost. And I kid you not, this car of mine, Triumph, shot up in the air like a rocket. Two old ladies in a garden said, "Look, there goes Father Leo." That's how he travels now. Hey, it didn't stay up there. Came down, crash, bang. Went through the windscreen. By the way, you want to check me out? I've got stitches in the back of my neck. Still visual. Yep. I was the only one hurt. And from the hospital where they took me, I called the Bishop of Chichester. And he said, "Leo, I want you to go into treatment. Psychiatric treatment for alcoholism. I want you to go for 3 months. By the way, don't go dressed as a priest. You're a patient. No saying mass, nothing. You're a patient." And I went for 3 months. And during that time, I came to see you. Because like today, same here, people from treatment centers come to AA meetings. And I was one of them. And I came in a bus with everybody else. You know, I was just Leo. Some people found out that I was a priest, but it made no difference. The therapists were clear. I was a patient. And it was the best thing that happened to me. I'm not against therapy. I discovered parts of myself that I never would have done without therapy. And I also discovered you because of therapy. And I want you to know I've never left. I've never left. I never left Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I realized the big difference between abstinence and sobriety. I realized, yes. AA says, you know, the only requirement for membership is the desire. I get it. But it's not enough. It's enough if you only want to stop drinking. But it's not enough if you want to find out who you are. It's not enough if you want to journey into yourself and why you behaved and acted the way you did. And I don't know about you, but for me, the disease was before I ever took a drink or drugs. In actual fact, the alcohol was a fix for the brokenness that was within me. And now the journey to heal that brokenness had taken place. And I was on my journey, you know, and it's the 12 steps. And you start at one and you go through, and it's really, I know we say it's difficult, but Alcoholics Anonymous is so common sense. It's basically admit you've got a problem. Find a higher power that you want to call God or not, that makes sense to you, in or out the church, in or out of the synagogue. Start to work on yourself. You know, start to work on yourself. You know, that fourth and fifth step. Find a sponsor who's not just going to be a friend, but somebody who's going to tell you and help you and guide you and kind of like make suggestions, but not dominate you. You don't want a sponsor who's going to dominate you, so you become almost afraid of them. You want somebody who you can trust. Because some of the things you may share in your fourth and fifth step are things you've never shared with anybody at all, ever. And then realize, well, you know, we've got families here. Realize that what we was our disease became theirs. You know, and so you've got people who are finding a program for them as family members or friends or loved ones. People that we've hurt over the years. And we never took responsibility for the impact of our disease on other people. And then it says, after we've done the work, we can carry a message to alcoholics who are still suffering and maybe sponsor people. Now, don't misunderstand me. You can be helping people, carrying the message to people during the second step, fourth step, fifth step. But it is interesting that if you look at the 12 steps, it's in the 12th step that we carry the message to alcoholics who are still suffering. And it's worked fine for me. You know, I love it. I love the meetings. You know, I'm as enthusiastic about the meetings today as I was. It's a long journey to come to see you tonight. But you know what? Once you get here, you know, once you're surrounded by you people, you know, once tomorrow we have the spiritual program together, you know, it's going to be great. And then Kirk and I will drive home talking about the experiences that we've had. You know? So, you know, that's my story with you. I have an ending that I think is one that's powerful for you. Maybe you've never thought of this song in quite the same way, but it kind of recaps my life. I can tell you this, the God I had when I came into AA is not the God I have today. The God I had as a priest who said that babies that weren't baptized would not go to heaven is not the priest who stands before you now. The priest who would not give communion to people who were divorced is not the priest who stands before you now. I have changed. And I believe churches have changed too. You know, I think we've had to change. Sometimes you have to change. So I'm speaking in all places of Georgia conference with Father Joe Martin and myself. We're speaking there. And 5,000 people. Just fantastic meeting. And I talked about my moments when I realized I was an alcoholic. I needed to get help. And about the Bishop of Chichester who helped me. Yeah. Who'd have thought that was the man who sent me into treatment? So I'm standing outside, shaking hands with the people. This guy comes up to me, his name's David. He gets hold of my hands and starts shaking it, and really shakes it, you know? Like, he said, I'm an alcoholic and a crackhead. I said, okay, all right. Wow. He said, do you think that God can speak to you through a song? I said, a song? He said, a song. I said, yes. The balladeers of history. I said, of course. He said, because, Father Leo, I was ready to go out. And I was ready to do what I do. And that is get some alcohol and then get some cocaine. And I was ready to call my supplier. And he said, a song. A song came on the radio. And he said, I'd heard this song before, but it was like God was talking to me in this song. And I said, oh, really? He says, and I want to share the song with you because he said, it came from your country. It was the Beatles. I said, oh, really? He said, yes. I said, what was the song? He said, well, the song was this. When I was a young man, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now those days have gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and I've opened up the door. So help me. Help me if you can. I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? And I said, yes, David, there was help for you, and there was help for me. And by the way, that's why we're here tonight. We're here tonight to be helped and to help. And three things will happen once we do this on a regular basis. Three things. And they all begin with L. We'll live again like we've never lived before. We'll love again and love ourselves like we've never loved before. And oh yes, we'll laugh again. Laugh like we've never laughed before. God bless you. God bless you.